All right, Bayview, man, it's good to be here with you guys again. I haven't been to Bayview in about a month now, and God has been doing some really cool things in our lives, and we've been able to be a part of some other churches on Sunday mornings, and then also Easter Sunday, we got to have our baptism service and our sunrise service, and you guys had a big sunrise service here, and we were on the other side of the bay having a sunrise service with our church, Guam Christian Life Fellowship, and but God is doing some really cool things in our lives, And it's just so cool to be here at Bayview this morning because my family and I, we attend here generally on Sunday mornings, and I get to preach a lot, but this week I was asked if I was nervous to preach at Bayview, and I said, you know, I kind of am a little bit, and I'm trying to figure out why would I be nervous to preach at Bayview when I preach often, and, you know, I preach at GCLF quite a bit. I preach in a prison. I preach at the university, at Pacific Islands University, and I was trying to figure out why I would be nervous to preach at Bayview, and I think the reason is that, you know, I went to GCLF, and I'm known there as a pastor, a teacher, a preacher. And my relationship with them is as a teacher, as a preacher, as a pastor. And my relationship with most churches on the island, my first introduction to them is when I preach to them, right? And so, but it's interesting because we've been on island for almost 2 years, and this is my first time preaching at Bayview. And so I know you as my friends, right? My acquaintances, the people I talk to after service, the people that we do life together with. And so I'm not used to preaching here. And so this morning's a little bit different for me. It's a little bit odd for me. But, you know, I want to tell you guys about who I am and who, you know, what God has for me and my family here on the island. And I would like for you to ask yourself a question this morning. I would like to ask you what your purpose is in life. Like, why God made you? What is my purpose in life? Why did God make me, right? Well, I'm a pastor's son, okay? I've been in church my whole life. And honestly, I was born on a Tuesday. And Tuesday of May the 15th of 1984, was visitation day for my church, and the pastor of the church that my family went to came to the hospital to visit my family and hold me in the hospital, right? So that's how church I am, right? And like, literally, I've been in places where people give their testimony, and they were like, on the 11th day that I was alive, I was in church, and I'm like, you missed a Sunday, man. Like your mom didn't, she missed a Sunday, you know? I'm so church that I've been in church my whole life. I've been around church my whole life, and here's what I know about church, is that sometimes, this is just what we do, right? Like Sunday morning, this is what we do on Sunday morning, we go to church. And sometimes we show up and we're just find ourselves sitting here and there's somebody in front of us, we sing some songs, somebody's sitting in front of us, next thing you know, it's over and we leave, right? But I wonder this morning if maybe we could have a little bit of a different time and we take a moment to just really reflect on the fact that God has us here for a reason, right? That God brought us here today, all of us together, for a reason. And I would like to ask you to examine what the purpose is God has for your life. Here's what I really want, like, I want you to think about that God, long ago, maybe longer for some of you than others, he was putting you together right inside your mother's womb, and he was putting all of your cells and your DNA together, and he was doing it for a reason, right? And he has a reason for your life, a purpose for your life. And I want you to think about that. Examine what his purpose is for your life. But here's what I would like for you to do today. What if we just, before we even get into it, before we start, we just told the Lord that if you were to come here today and you were to speak to me, God, that I would respond. Like if you showed me something about my life and my purpose that you would have me to change, to add, to subtract from my life, Lord, I'll respond to you today. I mean, guys, think about this. The God of heaven coming into our room, and much less that, he's coming into our room, and he's also coming into our life, and he's convicting our hearts, right? And so what if today we just decided, hey, look, if God convicts me today, I'll make a change in my life. I'll change something about my life. You know, for me, that happened a long time ago. As a seven-year-old boy, I gave my life to Jesus. And then as a Bible college student, I told the Lord that I would be a missionary. In fact, God had sent a man to my church, and he shared the field of Australia with my church. And I remember sitting in church one Sunday, and I just said, oh, Lord, this would be great. Like, I could go there. Like, I feel like you're moving me to respond to this. And God, this is awesome because they speak English. I don't have to learn another language. Oh, man, that would be great, Lord. And I made a deal with God that day. And it was in a church very similar to this. And I was sitting over in this area. And I said to the Lord, I said, if you will open the doors, I'll walk through them. And I started pursuing being a missionary to Australia. And when I met my wife, I told her, I said, hey, I just need you to know, like, God called me to be a missionary, and I'm pursuing being a missionary to Australia. And if that's not okay with you, you know, we should probably just stop talking right now. And she looked at me and said, baby, you are so fine. I'll follow you anywhere. I don't know if those were her exact words, but it was something like that, right? She was like, man. And so we started pursuing Australia. And together we went, we moved to Australia. We took our firstborn daughter there. We had another child born there. We served there for 2 years as missionaries. And our visas ran out, and we went back to the States, and that was all planned. We went back to raise some more support and to start a new visa process. And so after about a year and a half, 2 years of raising support and our new visa process, we were all ready to go. We were amped up. We were excited. And I was flying back to Australia every I don't know, 3 months or so for a couple weeks, and I was preaching to the church there, and I was getting them ready for when we returned. And then in March of 2020, my wife and I went back to Australia, and man, I got to preach a two-part series about what our church was going to look like when we got back, and the kind of language we were going to use as a church, and the kind of people we were going to try to reach, people who are far from God, and we're going to bring them into the fold of God, and God's going to use us, right? And it was so cool, and I remember March 15th of 2020, it was a Sunday, and I was like, hey guys, we're going to dream about what our church could be, but hey, I want to take a moment to pray, because there's this little thing that's happening in the world, this coronavirus thing. And so we should pray that we respond correctly, right? And we pray that God would have us to respond right. And then March 16th, my wife and I are on a plane, and the world freaks out, right? Like, everything shuts down. And I remember leaning over to my wife. She was sitting on the other side of the aisle. And she says, Ian, this guy right next to me, he said that today the prime minister announced that everybody coming into Australia starting today has to quarantine for 2 weeks. And I'm like, wow. Good thing we prayed, you know? And we get back to the States, and we don't know what to do, but our church is there, and they're now going to be locked down, and we're in the States, and everybody starts locking down there. And so 2 weeks later, our church in Canberra, Australia, was online, and I was preaching from a living room in Springfield, Missouri, to a church in Canberra, Australia, every Saturday at 5 p.m. You know, we had a live service that was going on. It was 10 o'clock their time. In fact, they're in the same time zone as us here on Guam. And yet, you know, I did that from March until November of 2020. Something was happening in my life as the coronavirus was shutting the world down. And I was going into this, you know, this spiritually dark place, because I'm preaching to a camera, and that's really tough. And I'm trying so hard to be, you know, what my church needs, but I'm preaching in a room all by myself to a camera, and things are getting, I'm getting into deep, dark depression, and I need, as just a person, I need people, I need somebody to bless with my hand, right? And so as I'm getting into this place, I have a friend named John, and I just went to him, and I told him, I said, John, man, I'm struggling bad. And he says, hey, Ian, why don't you come serve here with me at Freeway Ministries? And this ministry is a ministry that works with people from the background of addiction. People coming from drug and alcohol addiction, people coming off the streets from jail and prison. And I started serving there on Thursday nights. I started helping make a meal for their discipleship class, and I got to meet these men and women. And I fell in love with these people who have a past, right? And next thing I knew, I was like, Don, I need something else. I need something more. And so I started coming in more often, and I would spend my days there. And people would call in, and grandmas were calling in and asking what to do with their grandson and their grandchild. And I was getting to help them and pray with them, and I was going to court and picking people up from jail and driving to prisons and grabbing people from prison and driving them back to our ministry and wondering if I was going to make it back, because it's a little odd when you pick a guy up from prison, you know, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's a 3-hour drive, so, you know. But man, it was just one of the coolest things that I've ever experienced. But the whole time, I didn't know what God was doing. I mean, for all this time, God, we have given our lives to go to Australia, and now all of a sudden it's like the doors aren't opening anymore. What is happening, right? Why is this happening? And I started again just like questioning what God was doing and why he wasn't leading me to what I thought was my purpose. And I just remember thinking and saying to people, I'm supposed to be in Australia. And yet God had put us on hold, right? He sat us down. He said, no, you're not going there right now. I have something else for you. And so we kept pursuing it. We kept our visa process active. And I had a friend who saw what was happening to me. He's my mentor. His name's Greg. He's a missionary in Manila, Philippines. He leads a large ministry called Global Surge. They have a Bible college called Global Life University. And they run between 25 and 3,000 students that they're training for ministry. And he sits me down one day and he says, Ian, I have to tell you. I just have to caution you. Because I see what you're doing at Freeway. And I see God's doing really awesome things in your life. But Ian, you can't give up on foreign missions. You just can't. You can't give up. Because Ian, if you resign, right? If you resign, no one's going to take your spot. And he's like, if you stop what you're doing, no one's going to do what you do. And if they did, it would take them like 10 years to get to where you're at. Because they'd have to go to Bible college. They'd have to raise all this money. They'd have to, if anybody took your spot, it would take so long. He says, but if you left Freeway tomorrow, there'd be 20 people that put their hand up and say, I'll do what Ian did. And so we started dreaming. Okay, so what does this look like for us? What does missions look like? If we can't get into Australia, what does it look like? And so we built a thing called the No Worries Project. And we expanded our vision past Australia and to the Pacific Islands in general. And in December of 2021, I took a trip to Manila, Philippines. And the purpose of the trip was that I would recruit missionaries from this Bible college to come to the Pacific Islands and plant churches and start gospel conversations with people and be active in ministering to people. And let me tell you, church, it was the worst experience of my life. It was so bad. Because two days before I left, my friend, who's my mentor, his father passed away. And his father lives in Springfield, Missouri, where I'm from. And so I fly to Manila, and he flies to Springfield, and he says, don't worry, I'll be back right after the funeral. It's going to be okay. And I get into Manila, and I have to quarantine for 7 days. And then while I'm in quarantine, there's a massive lockdown in Manila. And you're not supposed to leave the house, or you're not supposed to leave unless you're like, totally necessary, you know, which I don't know if you could tell, but I'm pretty necessary, you know. But you're not supposed to go anywhere, you know. I had spent 19 days away from my family. My mentor never showed up. I had to figure things out by myself. I did accomplish a couple things in ministry. But I thought to the Lord, I thought, God, what a waste. What a waste of my time. Why would you do this? And then on the way home, I land in the airport on Guam. And I'm sitting in the airport. And I realize, you know, we've been through this visa process. And at this point, it's 4 years of our life. And I'm sitting in the airport and I realize, like, and I don't know if it was the Lord or just, like, common sense. But it was like, hey, this is America, right? Like, I could move here, technically, right? I don't think I have to have a visa. I could just come. And so I'm sitting there. I'm texting my dad. My dad lived here when he was a kid. His dad was in the Navy. And I just had this thought, like, maybe if Australia closes, we could move to Guam. If God closes the door there, we could move to Guam. And so I get home, and I tell my wife, I said, hey, babe, if Australia falls through, maybe we could move to Guam. And she's like, let's go now. And I'm like, no, wait, if Australia falls through, like, maybe we could go to Guam, you know? And so I sit down with my pastor, and I explain to him what we're doing with this church planting thing, and he says, Ian, I think there's a problem with your plan. He's like, I love your enthusiasm. I love how excited you are about this. But Ian, I think it's time for you to give up on this visa process. I think it's time for you to make a move. I think it's time for you to go to Guam. And I was like, hold up, pastor, like, pump the brakes, you know? Like, it's been 12 years of my life now. It's all pointed to the same thing in the same direction. And I still remember, because I was at Freeway when this happened, and I'm sitting on steps just like this on the altar of Freeway Ministries. It's completely dark in the room, and I'm talking to my pastor. And he prays with me as we make the decision to move to Guam. And he says these words. He says, God, I know that they're going to have shaky legs as they move in this new direction. And let me tell you, those were probably the most accurate words that you could imagine. Because the only thing I could tell you guys is that I wasn't sinning in moving here. I couldn't tell you that I was doing exactly what God had for me. I couldn't tell you that God, like, there was a burning bush and, like, you know, the Lord spoke to me and there was some dream or vision or epiphany that I'm supposed to move to Guam, right? It's just an open door. And man, only thing we knew when we came here is that we weren't sinning. We were here for a couple weeks and we, by the way, Salt and Light Realty, shout out, Shine Walker. They're our realty company, you know, and we're looking to rent a house, and our realtor's name is Alex, and she showed us a couple houses, and we found a house in Santa Hania. And so we go to furniture, Kathy style, and we're looking for furniture to furnish our house, right? And we're in this furniture store, and all of a sudden, like seriously, there's nobody else in this store, and it's just us and the workers, and there's this one old man, and he comes up to my wife and he says, hey, you have really, really obedient kids and they're really, really beautiful children. And we start talking and I ask him, I said, hey, what do you do for work, Robert? And he says, he's weird. He like leans in and like it's a secret. And he's like, hey, he's like, I'm the director of the Department of Corrections. And I was like, oh, okay. Do you know the warden? And he's like, yeah, I hire the warden. And I'm like, oh, okay, so he's a big deal. And like, I had to take my hat off because I was wearing a hat for this ministry that I had worked for the last 2 years, working with men from prison and women from prison and people from jail. And I said, hey, I want to tell you about what we've done for the last couple of years. And so, long story short, I become friends with Robert. We go out to lunch and we hang out. And one day I just asked Robert, I said, Robert, do you guys have a chaplain in the prison? He's like, Ian, we haven't had a chaplain for years. And he looks at me and he says, hey, would you want to be the chaplain in the prison? And you know, there's some times where you got to be like, well, let me pray about it. This time I was like, I didn't need to. I was like, yes, I want to be the chaplain in the prison. And so since March of last year, I've gotten to go into the prison. I've gotten to preach there 4 different times a week. And you know, in the last year, we've seen 95 inmates give their lives to Jesus. And it's been one of the coolest things. Yeah. And thank God, right? It's been one of the coolest things. In October of this last year, I got to baptize 20 of those men. We offer baptism to 2 of the 6 posts that we work with. And I got to see 20 of those men baptized, follow Jesus in believer's baptism. And God is just doing some really cool things in the prison. But during this time, my family and I are passionate about church planting. And so when I first got here, the first Sunday we were here, we came to Bayview. And I met with Pastor Kevin that first week, and I told him we're going to be church planters. And so in September of last year, we were planning this whole, we're going to plant a church. And in September, I grabbed Pastor Kevin and I said, hey, I'm not here to steal anybody, right? But we've made some really good friends with a couple of families in the church, and they're Bayviewers, but man, that we've talked about our church plant, and they want to be a part, and I'm just wondering, would it be okay if I asked them? And he was so good. Pastor Kevin's such a wonderful man. He says, Ian, go get him, man. Go get him. We're for you. We want to see our church planted too. But during this time, I had some people approach me, and they asked me to pray about putting in a resume to be the president of Pacific Islands University. And so now, long story short, I became the president of Pacific Islands University, And I get to lead some of the most amazing, wonderful men and women of God on our staff. And I get to minister to some of the most amazing young students who love Jesus. And it's so cool to see the transformation from knucklehead 18-year-old on their own for the first time to, you know, fully devoted follower of Jesus who's wanting to make a difference in the world. It's amazing to see what God does. And I tell you all that because I want you to know that my purpose is still being developed, right? That God is still unfolding my purpose in life. And yet he continues to unfold it. And today, I want you to examine your purpose, not just with what does God want me to do with life, but your purpose in light of the Great Commission. Who has God put you in this world to share the message and the hope of Jesus with? You know, Mark Twain says this. He's an American author. He says this, the two greatest days in life are the day that you're born and the day that you figure out why. I'm telling you, man, if you figure out who God has you to serve in life, no one's going to have to prod you to get out of bed. You'll jump out of bed in the morning when God shows you what your purpose is. There's another American author named Mark Batterson. He says this about today, people today. He says, most people today die at the age of 27, and we bury them at the age of 72. Anybody in here understand that? Like we die early on in life, right? Like our dreams, our visions, our passions are gone, and yet we just kind of coast through life now. And we, you know, I went to school and now I have to pay off my student loans. Like, so that's what I'm doing, you know? And we just get stuck in this rut of life. But I want to encourage you today. I want you to encourage you to not live your life for nothing. I want to encourage you to live your life for the thing that matters more than anything. I want to show you this morning from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 3 things that Jesus changes when he comes into a person's life. And the first is this, is that when Jesus comes into someone's life, he changes our character. He changes who we are at the very core of our being, right? He changes my character. He changes me from just being a physical being after the flesh to being a spiritual being after the spirit. And there's this guy called Paul in the Bible, and he writes to this church in a place called Corinth, a real city called Corinth. And he's writing to these people, and there's a group of people within the church who are kind of trying to take control. And Paul's writing to this church, and he's making his case that the people of the church should listen to him and not to these others who are trying to drag them away from the good news, right? And these people would say of Paul, they said of him, you're crazy. And earlier on in chapter 5, Paul notices that. He says, they're going to tell you that I'm nuts, I'm crazy, I'm out of my mind. But then he says this in verse 14. He says, I'm not out of my mind. He says, but either way, whether I'm out of my mind or I'm just walking with God, he says, either way, Christ's love controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life. He died for everyone so that those who receive his new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they will live for Christ who died and was raised for them. So we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone. A new life has begun. I love how C.S. Lewis puts it. He says, you're not a physical being having a spiritual experience. You're a spiritual being having a physical experience, right? And Paul says here, he says, hey, listen, this old life is gone. There's a new life that has begun. And my question for you today is this. Who are you when no one else is watching? Who are you when no one else is watching? Who are you when no one else is around? Because this is who we are, right? The man I am when no one else is around, when no one can find out, when no one will know, that's actually who I am. That's who I really am. But who are you when no one's around? Are you disciplined in your character? Better yet, does the love of Christ control you? Like Paul says, the love of Christ controls me. I'm a new creation. I'm somebody who does things different because when Jesus comes into a person's life, he changes who they are at the very core of their being. There's a guy called Ralph Waldo Emerson who says this about life. He says, if you sow a thought, you reap an action. If you sow an act, you reap a habit. If you sow a habit, you reap a character. If you sow a character, you reap a destiny. Now, if you're anything like me this morning, you automatically went to like, if I sow a bad thought, I'm going to reap a bad habit. If I sow a bad habit, I'm going to reap a bad character. If I sow a bad character, I'm going to reach a bad destiny, right? But you know the reverse is also true. The Bible tells us that we're to take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ, right? And as we sow the thoughts of God, as we sow good thoughts, we reap good habits, we reap good character, we reap good destiny. We begin to follow Jesus. And this is what Jesus does in our life when we come to know him. He changes who we are at the very core of our being. He changes our character. You know, Jesus also changes our passion. Verse 18, Paul goes on and he says, and all this is a gift from God who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. For God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. Church, God changes what we're passionate about. All this is a gift from God. God has given us a task of reconciling people to him. And I love this because this is always good news in verse 19. No longer counting people's sins against them. Let me tell you, in prison, that gets an amen, right? Like, God doesn't count our sins against us anymore. You know, this was made really, really clear to me when I had to confront a friend in ministry. And there was a man, a mentor of mine, who left his wife for a lady in the church, his best friend's wife, a woman and her husband that he had counseled. He was a pastor, and he was found to be in a relationship that was inappropriate, and I had to be a part of confronting him, and I had to be a part of standing in front of his church and saying, church, I know you love this man, I do too, but here's some things that we need to discuss. He is in sin, he's fallen, and it's so heartbreaking to me. And I had to call a friend, Dr. Carson, at the college that I went to, and I said, I need you to help me. And he says, Ian, you have to understand something about the gospel. And I told him that my friend he's not leaving the church, he's not leaving the Lord, he's wanting to get right, but he's still in this relationship. And he tells me, he says, Ian, you need to understand that something about the gospel, because this man was a pastor, and he declared the good news of Jesus for 24 years, faithfully in a church. And he said, Ian, do you know that when that man, years and years ago, asked Jesus to forgive him of his sins, that Jesus forgave his sins, past, present, and future, and that Jesus knew when he said, yes, I'll forgive you, that one day that man who would faithfully preach for all those years would eventually fall into that relationship with that woman. But Jesus still, in that moment when that man called on him for salvation, he said, yes, I'll forgive you, knowing that that man would one day fall. You see, when we come to know Jesus, man, he no longer counts our sins against us. Church, that's good news, right? That's good news. And maybe you're here this morning and you're like, man, you don't know what I did last night, though. I'm telling you, when Jesus forgave you, he knew what you're going to do last night, right? And he still said yes. That's good news. Jesus has given us a job, though, of reconciling the world to himself. God has given us a task of reconciling people to him. And so my question for you is this. Are you disciplined in sharing your faith with others? The Bible tells us we're to be ready always to give an answer, right? Are you disciplined? Has Jesus changed your passion? Has Jesus changed what you're passionate about? Are you passionate about the gospel? I know that there's people in here that are. I don't want to embarrass them, so I won't name them. But there's people in this room who are passionate about the good news of Jesus. And you know, lastly, Jesus changes our purpose. He gives us a new purpose in life. And he's given us what we call the Great Commission. Go, therefore, into all the world and make disciples of all nations, right? But in verse 20, Paul says this. He says, so we are Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ. Church, did you know God's given you a job? If you've become a follower of Jesus, if you put your faith and trust in him, and he's come to live in your life, he's given you a job. He's given you a new purpose, a new task. And you are an ambassador for him. And God is making his appeal to your friends and your neighbors and your family through you. And I love how Paul says it here. He says, we speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. Guys, that means that when you're sharing your faith with your friends and neighbors and family, that as the words are coming from your mouth, it's as if God were speaking through you, that you're a tool in the hand of a holy God, and you're speaking, and yet he's using your voice to draw somebody to himself. Man, that's the most amazing thing that you could do with your life and with your mouth. That's the most amazing thing you could do with your words. You know, several years ago, I had a friend, 28 years old. His name was Brent, and he was one of the most fit people I knew. And one day, just out of the blue, Brent was driving down the highway. He was with a friend. He was in Dallas, Texas. They were talking about the Lord, and Brent said these words, man, God is so good. And his friend said that they were sitting in the car, and he was just driving down the highway, and next thing he knew, he heard the sound of the strips on the side, and he looks over, and Brent's head is hunched over. And he grabs him and he pulls his foot off the gas and he pulls the car over to the side of the road. For 25 minutes, he tried to revive Brent. And yet Brent, just that day, out of the blue, his heart just stopped on him. And he died, 28 years old. I tell you that because I want you to know, not so that you can be like, oh, I'm sorry about your friend, but I want you to know you don't have forever, church. And we can't live like our life is just like we're invincible, right? We can't live like that. We don't have forever, and neither do your friends. And it's up to us to take the good news of Jesus to them. You know, in Romans chapter 10, verses 13 through 15, Paul's writing to a different church in Rome, and this is what we're actually going through right now as a series as a church. And Paul says these words to the church at Rome. He says, for everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him in whom they've never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. Now, hey, I want to try something different today. And don't worry, if this is weird for you, don't worry. I'm not going to be here next week. But why don't you do me a favor? Wherever you're sitting, if you're watching online, just whoever you're sitting next to, why don't you look at each other this morning? Find somebody to lock eyes with this morning. Look at each other. And I just want you to come on, look at each other, everybody. Come on, I can see you. So, I mean, it's like, look at each other. And I just want to, why don't you just say these words? Why don't you just say to each other, say you have, come on, everybody, come on, look at each other. Say, you have beautiful feet, right? Some of you wives are like, I'm not saying it. It's not true, and I'm not allowed to lie in church, right? Like, but Paul says this. He says, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. And man, you might have gangly looking, nasty, all nastied up feet. But let me tell you, if your feet are bringing the good news of Jesus to somebody and their life is radically transformed by him, boy, you have some spiritually beautiful feet. How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. Church, don't waste your life. In Romans chapter 12, Paul says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he's done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of the world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. You know, church, there are people just like you. They're just like you, and they're waiting. They're waiting for Jesus to change their life. They're waiting for him to change their eternity. And they're waiting for us to bring the good news to them. You know, in Romans chapter 1, Paul says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation." And so this morning, let me ask you a question. Why is it? Why is it that oftentimes people around us in our daily life, why is it that we don't often see people come to know the Lord? You think maybe that the Spirit of God is done working in our world today? Or maybe the Father's done like drawing people to himself, right? Or maybe Jesus is no longer desirable. Or maybe the problem isn't God at all, right? Maybe the problem is me. Maybe the problem is that unlike Paul, I have become ashamed of the gospel, right? You know, when I was a kid, man, I loved to play baseball. And I wasn't good at it, but I liked to play it. And I was a pretty decent fielder. And that's why I was on the team. I was a good third baseman. But man, I was a terrible hitter. And I probably set some records as far as bad hitting. And so because I was so bad, I developed a strategy. I'm going to stand here, and maybe he'll throw me four balls, and I'll get to walk to first, right? Like, and so that was my strategy. I'm just going to stand here, and we'll see. And, you know, every once in a while, I just go like that just to, like, make it look like I was trying. And I remember our third year of playing baseball, we were the Braves. And our team was in the playoffs, and we were in a double elimination tournament. And so that means you have to lose twice in order to be out. And so we play the first game. It's a night game. And we come down to the last inning, and we're down by one run. And my friend Frankie's up to bat, and Frankie gets a hit. He's our best hitter, and I'm in the on-deck circle, and so I'm up next. And so I get up, and I get out. And so we lost, and we have to play another game the next day now, and it's a day game. And if we lose, we're out. And you guys aren't going to believe this, man. It comes down to the last inning, and we are down to our last out, and we're down by one run again. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. Here we are again, you know. But this time, my best friend John Rigo's on third base. And Frankie's coming up. And I'm like, okay, Frankie, here we go, baby. You get a hit, and you'll tie the game. And then I'll get out. And that's what I do, you know. It'll be okay. But at least I won't lose the game. And I won't lose our season two games in a row. Like, it'll be okay. And I remember watching the coach come out from the dugout. And he went like this. He put up four fingers. And I'm standing in the on-deck circle. Of course, I'm looking good. You know, like, I'm like, psh, I might be bad, but I'm trying to look nice, right? And so I'm in the on-deck circle. I'm, like, trying to look like you don't want to face me, dude. And the coach comes down. He says, four, walk this guy. Pitch to the fat kid, right? Like, pitch to the chubby one. And so they walk Frankie. And I remember, I'm standing in the on-deck circle, and the dugout's right here. And I remember hearing my team say, that's it. It's over. They're walking Frankie. They're going to pitch to Ian. We lost. And I'm like, yup, like, it's over, guys. Get the orange slices out. Call Pizza Hut. Tell them we're on our way because it is over. And so they walk Frankie, and I get up to bat. And guys, I'm telling you something. My dad, he just wanted me to try. That's all he wanted me to do. We would go out, and he would throw buckets of balls and just say, swing. I don't care if it's out. Just swing. Just come on. Swing the bat. Give, like, try. And I still remember, man, I remember this pitch like it happened yesterday. That pitcher threw a ball. It was fast, and it was straight. It was on the outside corner of the plate, and I can picture it in my mind to this day because it was finally a ball that I watched come out of his hand. I remember seeing it hit the bat, and that ball went. I followed it all the way out to right field. I'm watching it, and I'm running, and I get to first base, and I'm standing there. John scored, and I'm standing on first base. And the ball's still going, and I don't know what to do. I'm just standing here like, what do I do now? Like, I don't know what to do. And the ball's like over there, and I'm like, hey, I didn't get out. This is awesome. And then I see, okay, the guy gets the ball, and he throws it in, and I'm still standing there like, do I keep going? What do I do? And I'm just standing there. I'm like, I didn't get out. This is just the best thing. And I see Frankie around third base. And that ball comes into the cutout, man, and it goes into the catcher, and I see Frankie slide in between the catcher's legs, and he comes down with the tag, and the umpire says, safe. And then the weirdest thing happened is that it seemed like nobody had any clue what happened. Nobody knew. I'm like, oh, yay, we scored, yay. And everybody's like, yay, we scored. And the other team is like, what happened? And the umpire's jaws are on the floor, and they're like, what happened? And the parents are in the stands like, what just happened? But you know, there was one person. Oh man, one person knew exactly what happened. Because he was sitting by three rows deep, and next thing I know, he's up against the fence, and he's saying, "Yeah, you did it." And that was my dad. And he was like, "You did it. You did it. Ian, you won the game." And it was so cool. But I tell you that story because it has nothing to do with baseball. Because I just tried, right? And I wonder, church, I wonder if when we share the gospel, if when we try, I wonder if our Father in heaven has his hands in the air in victory, saying, "You're doing it. You're doing it. You're doing what I told you to do. You're sharing the good news. You're doing it." Church, we have one job. It's to share the message. Literally everything else is up to God. He's the one that calls. He's the one that convicts. He's the one that saves. And he's called us to tell. Church, are you swinging the bat? Are you telling? Are you giving it a try? Because that's all our Father asks us to do. Here in a moment, we're going to take communion. And we're going to ask you while the band is playing to come up and grab a cup. But maybe you're here today and you've never put your faith and trust in Jesus. I want you to know that right where you're sitting right now, you can start a relationship with the God of heaven. If you would, from your heart, confess your sin to him and put your faith and trust in him, right now from where you're sitting, you can do that. And if you're a Christian, and maybe today you're feeling a little bit convicted, like I've got people in my life that don't know Jesus. Their eternity, their destiny right now is hell. And yet God has given me a message. And right now I'm ashamed to say it. I'm ashamed to do it. I'm ashamed to swing. I'm ashamed to try. Church, why don't we act a little different this week? Why don't we decide that we're not going to be ashamed of the good news of Jesus? Guys, it is the power of God unto salvation. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity we have today to be here. God, thank you for this wonderful church. I thank you for these wonderful people. And Lord, I know that there are many here that are not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. God, I pray that you'll help us, you'll convict us. Lord, to just give it our best shot. Swing the bat to try, knowing that everything else is up to you. You're the one that's going to convict our friend's heart. You're the one that's going to convict our family's heart. You're the one that's going to draw them to yourself. You're the one that has to save. But yet you've entrusted to us the message of reconciliation. We're the ones that go and tell. And you use us, you speak through us as we proclaim the good news of Jesus. And God, my prayer for this church is that we will get serious about proclaiming the good news of Jesus. That we would get serious about this method of reconciliation that you've entrusted to us. God, that we would find our purpose in light of the Great Commission. That, Lord, we would not waste our life, but we use it for the thing that matters most. As he says in Jesus' name.